Rise and shine! It's a great day in the North Woods!
Welcome to the Camp Voyager podcast. I'm Alex Quanley, and on today's show, I interview Ned Yonkers. Ned was raised in New Hampshire, but grew up at Camp Voyager. He is the type of guy who excels at anything he puts his mind to. As a native English speaker, he attended graduate school in China, where his classes and thesis were all in Mandarin. However, Ned wasn't always so poised. In today's episode, we discuss his journey. Ned Yonkers, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're happy to have you, and it's nice to catch up a little bit. Haven't seen you in 4 or 5 years now.
I know, it's wild to think about. It's honestly crazy, but the world has been crazy. So here we are.
Yep. Say, do you like to still say words backwards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the time. Just the other day, I was passing this restaurant. It's like a fancy boutique cafe called Intelligentsia. And I was like, that's a good complex word. And I thought about it backwards and I was like, Ice-ne-gelet-ni. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So yes, the answer to that question is a firm yes. I always think about words backwards.
That's not just a camp talent?
No.
So you're well known around your community over there in Boston as
well,
your friends over there?
Yeah. I haven't publicly announced this particular quirk of mine to the masses yet, but yeah, I kept that out of the Boston Globe article.
And of course, you still know how to say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious backwards, because that's always the one word that comes to mind when people say, when people learn about your talent, they say, well, can you say that backwards?
Soicotalipsisitsiligarfalacropus.
How about Camp Voyager?
Makrugayov. I know the whole Camp Voyager song backwards. You know that.
Oh, okay. We got to prove it. It's been a while. I forgot.
All right, it goes, Capim Cas, Steno Im Cab, Fo Atu Glo Rugayov, Rugayov, Serda Im Liam, Tihit Liart, Fo Atu Glo Rugayov, Rugayov, Eru U Cro Dna Yelp, Dna Iva Tothol Nuff, Eru I Reeve Yab, Sied Nair Fat I Reeve Reto Eno, La Yad No, Signig. Nignis Signas Fo Atu Glo Rugayov Rugayov Imak Gnola Niajet Gnort Stat et Pimak Roth MVC.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I learned that on the trail. I just spend like hours paddling, just going through every single line, learning it backwards.
Great way to pass the time.
That's right.
So how many summers have you spent at camp? I know it in my first year was in 2016, and you were already a veteran at that point. I remember you were like, yeah, this is like my 12th year or something. I'm like, 12 years? You're only like 22.
Yeah, exactly. So I started going to camp in 2004, and I was 9 years old. And basically the reason, or like the way I ended up there, is I had originally been going to like a day camp in New Hampshire. And I didn't really like it because it wasn't like full adventure. It was just a day camp where we would choreograph dances to NSYNC and then play like highly regulated deep woods capture the flag that just turned into like wandering around in the woods while other people run around. And so we tried like a different, like a nature camp, like an Audubon style camp. And that was just arts and crafts and more like singing songs in a circle, which, I mean, that stuff is all cool. I just knew I wanted more high adventure stuff. And so we looked at what kind of places would take a 9-year-old that was also not like a daycare. And two places came up. There was one that was like a cowboy themed thing in Wyoming. Ooh. Which, yeah, I know, tempting, but you know, it's at the time I kind of thought cowboys were kind of lame. As like my whole perception of cowboys was like corny, like spaghetti Western films. And even as a kid, I was really cynical and I would see these spaghetti Westerns and I'd be like, cowboys aren't cool.
Yeah. You could sense that it's not as romantic as it sounds.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So then the alternative was Camp Voyager. And I think, I don't know, it must have been more the push away from the cowboy camp at the time, honestly. But I did also, there's a lot of canoe culture up in New England too. So I think it was just easier for me to relate to canoeing as being something that I was comfortable getting into. Because it was clear that like canoeing is going to be a big part of the experience. And I was ready for that. And so 2004 was my first year. And then I went every summer until I want to say the summer of 2015 was the first summer that I didn't go. And then I came back for 2016, 2017, and 2018. And then I don't think I've been back since then. Pretty sure that's how that works out. So let's count those years. 2004 all the way up to 2014 would have been 11 years. And then add 3 more years onto that. So that's 14 years total.
Wow. And what did you tell your friends? Or when people asked, what the heck you're doing all summer for 14 summers, why did you disappear?
I mean, I would just tell them I was going to summer camp. And I think for a lot of them, if they didn't really have that overnight summer camp experience, it was harder to relate to what exactly that meant. And unfortunately, like my friend group back home, I think most of them weren't really summer camp people. And it was a tiny school too. Like my graduating class was only 70 kids. And then, you know, half of them are girls. So you've got a pool of about, you know, 36 other kids that maybe will go to summer camp. And so like I was usually just, you know, I was a summer camp kid, but I didn't really mind that. Like I embraced it. It's kind of nice to be able to get out of the environment that you grew up in and kind of start to see the world a little bit and see what it's like to actually meet new people and get out of your element a little bit.
So you just told them, I was at a camp all summer.
Yeah. And I mean, if they were really curious, I might show them some stuff, but it's tough because a lot of the things and the memories you forge like really live at camp. And so it's hard to like pull those stories out and share them with people in a meaningful way. It's kind of like, you wouldn't get it if you weren't there kind of thing. But I never really felt like I was missing out by not being able to share that because you know how good it was for you. And so who cares, you know, yeah. If these other people that weren't there, like they don't get it. Like, of course you don't get it. You weren't there.
I completely agree. It's so hard to explain it to people who haven't experienced it. And for the first few years I worked there, before I got more serious, and now I'm full time, but before I got more serious about it, my friends barely knew anything about this camp because I would try to explain it. And it's just like some things you just can't explain properly until you've experienced it. And unfortunately, summer camps can have bubble blowing fun, yay, water slide, stereotypical. In people's minds, that's kind of what they think about, but there's some like Camp Voyager and some others up there that are, I mean, we're taking some serious wilderness adventures and doing some serious impacts on kids' lives, that it's more than just this happy little fun time, which it is fun, but so I can totally relate to that.
Yeah. It's like, it's something, it's honestly a really, the more that I look back on it too and seeing how it's kind of shaped me, it's really amazing to have like be in a community where you really feel like everyone is being genuinely included, like full inclusivity. Whatever baggage you were carrying before you step into camp, once you get into camp, you can like let all of that go and have an opportunity to, I don't want to say redefine yourself, but have an opportunity to actually explore who you are in a more free way.
Mm-hmm.
In an environment where, you know, you've got close friendships and relationships with people that are going through the same experience that you're going through. And I think it's so hard to find other people that are going through a relatable experience because everyone's lives are so different. But like when you're on the trail or you're sharing a cabin, you do have multiple different perspectives all on the same experience. And I think being able to have that central experience shared through multiple perspectives really helps you connect with people and learn how to connect deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the same way, that's hard for us to explain what it's like up there to friends and family when we get back home. Same thing with kids when they're up there, it works to the camp's benefit because it's, they could explain what their life is back home, but up there, it really doesn't matter a whole lot what their house looks like or what car their parents drive or that they're on this sports team or that sports team because it's so far away and removed. And like you said, it's when you're on a trip, it comes down to the bare essentials and how good you are with helping the group and what you do for the group and how you treat other people. And it's a good life lesson.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do not think I would be the same person. I genuinely, I think I would be a worse person if I didn't go to camp. I think I would be more selfish. I think I would be less self-aware. Because when you're on the trail and you have like a beef, there's no escaping it. You've got to figure out a way to get through it one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to figure out a way that's going to maintain peace or at least tolerance. Even if people are really, you know, not getting along, learning how to, you know, sleep in the same tent and, you know, get squished up next to each other when you're going to bed or share a meal, even though you had like some major disagreement earlier, that's a major life skill.
And going on to be a counselor too, the way you learn to work with kids, I find myself using that skill all the time. I was a teacher, of course, for several years, but teaching kids in a classroom is a lot different than living and working and playing with them at camp and being on a trip with them where you're spending 24/7 with them and you get to know them so much deeper and get to learn to care for them and what they need to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's one thing counselors that work there, that's one of their big takeaways too, is like, I really learned to work with kids from this job.
You know, I was working as a teacher for a couple of years too.
Yeah. And you got your teaching certificate, didn't you?
I did.
Your teaching license.
Yeah. And yeah, I couldn't agree more that I think that summer camp counselor experience, I think for me, the benefit, at least as far as my teaching went, was you just see the kids for more than their academic performance. And when you can like identify where a kid excels and allow them to express that skill or that talent in whatever class environment you are, so that their grade isn't just like a number, but a manifestation of what they're actually interested in, that gets the kids more engaged with what's happening and they'll respect your authority more and actually take things seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like, it's just unfortunate how much like just focusing on the academic performance misses so much. And I think really creates that chasm of understanding between the authority figures and the kids.
And I think just a relationship building you can have on a canoe trip with kids versus in a classroom is just crazy. Like that's why I always like to go on like a field trip or something with the school and volunteer for that, because you can get to know them so much more.
Yeah.
And it's that relationship that makes them care about what you're trying to teach and listen to you.
Exactly.
So when we were counselors together, you were the guy taking the advanced trips into the Quetico because you were kind of the top dog as far as experience and just being a good counselor. Do you have a few of your favorite memories or trip stories that really stick out or that you tell your family or friend, that you find yourself telling your friends and family the most about?
You know, in getting ready for this, I was like reviewing my inventory of positive trip memories that really stuck with me. And I do have a few, but I'll start by just saying, like, overwhelmingly, probably the trip that I have the most vivid memories of is Apostle Islands, because it is such a, it's so unique, because when you're kayaking in that cold Lake Superior water and you see those beaches and those caves, it really feels like you're on some different planet. And it's really special when you see like a big Lake Superior cargo tanker like going to one of the ports and you're just in this tiny little kayak going to these little islands. But there's just something really special about those islands. And I remember specifically on Devil's Island, a couple of things. One is what I find really interesting is there's a species of grass that only exists in Greenland and on that one island, because they bought a tractor from Greenland and it had dirt from their soil in it, and it populated the island with this one species of grass. Kind
of I've never heard that. I never knew that.
Yeah. And then the other thing is I remember just going through the caves on Devil's Island and looking up, and you can actually see like the islands are made of sedimentary rock. So it's like layers and layers and layers of sand and soil that have been compressed. And then the water carved that away to make the caves. And I just remember lying back in my kayak and looking up at the ceilings of the caves. And it's like you're looking at what was the bottom of the ground. It's like you're looking beneath where the ground used to be. And you can see like the waves of sand that were formed by the water. And I just always loved that. But I don't have any like really specific stories other than just the memories of looking at the ceiling of the cave and hearing about that one tractor. Both of those things really fascinated me.
Usually you're looking down at the ground. So you're underground, but looking up. Floating.
Underground, but also above the ground, floating, looking at the bottom of the soil ground.
In really cold water. And hope that tanker doesn't go by and cause a bunch of waves and make you kiss the top of that cave.
Yeah, that's why you keep you know, the corner of your eye out on the horizon, yeah. Just in case. That was one experience that I remember like on the trail really vividly. Okay, I've got one more specific trail story for you. This for me was like a moment again where like 2 hours I was like questioning reality and I was like, oh my God. So this was a Quetico trip, and I think it was in the Canipi area. But I remember we passed these pictographs, and if my memory serves me correctly, these pictographs had a portrayal of a Wendigo. And just a quick briefing on Wendigo. Wendigo is in, I believe it's Anishinaabe legend of these kind of demon people. They were starving European explorers that morphed into big demons that go around eating people. And I told my campers about this story and we saw the pictographs. And later we were paddling and it was starting to get like, sun's just gone behind the trees. Like we're getting into where we want to look for a campsite, end of day kind of thing. And I hear a sound. It sounds like it's in the distance. And it's just this like, almost like a high-pitched scream, but like 2 miles away. And it's like this sound like,
That's terrifying.
And I could hear it. And it was so faint, but I could hear it. And I had to stop paddling. And I like told the campers, like, stop. And I was like, listen. And the campers in my canoe stopped and they heard it too. And they were like, what is that? And I said, I genuinely have no idea. But it sounds like loud screaming about 2 miles from here. So we kept paddling. And every now and again, I would hear this sound again. I would stop and like put my paddle down and be like, oh my God, what is this sound? And it sounded like it started to get louder and louder. And I noticed the wind was picking up as it was getting louder and louder. And I just felt like I need to stop and either assess my mental condition or consider the fact that there is a monster coming for us. And I remembered that we passed like the Wendigo pictographs. And I was like, oh my God, there's a Wendigo here. And so for like a couple hours, I was just vexed at what was going on. And then I looked over to my side and I noticed we had 2 fishing poles out because we had stopped for a good bass hole. And the wind was just lightly cutting through the fishing line. And it what sounded like distant monster screaming was just my fishing line like lightly vibrating next to me in the boat. But I just have this like distinct memory of paddling like sunset, clear skies, paddling Canipi, feeling like I need to outrun this monster.
Oh, that's terrifying. I've heard the wind going through the eyes of the fishing rod and kind of make a howling type of sound that people have thought were wolves and loons. But I could just imagine being up in the Quetico and thinking you hear a Wendigo and having no solid explanation for several hours of what the heck that was.
Kind of embarrassing. It took me a few hours to figure out it was the fishing line. But good trick if you ever want to, you know, like set up your line specifically to do that. What is that noise?
Fool your campers.
Yeah, that's right.
If you guys don't paddle faster, this Wendigo that's howling behind
us. You
gotta go. It's kind of like Murphy's Portage, the Portage scavenger that
exactly
gets the slow campers. You know, you gotta hurry or this old hobo is gonna come and take you.
Yeah.
Take your stuff. You actually got your master's degree in China. Yes. in the Mandarin language as an English yes. native speaker. And you got your master's in, was it economics?
Yeah.
And you also mentioned to me, I think at the time as a, maybe a side job, you were working for an Australian sports betting company.
Not a company, just a guy.
And you were doing like statistic analysis for his sports bets or?
Basically, yeah. So this guy, he was a high stakes poker player. And he said like, 6-figure swings are too much like stress for him. So he retired from poker and he started just doing like high volume sports betting. So it's like, you got to put down like 10 or 20K a night. And so if you can make 5% on that, then you're doing all right. And so the name of the game is just doing enough like modeling the like expected value of players and different team compositions so that you can expect to get like a 5% profit on the bets that you make. And so you just need to make like an Excel spreadsheet basically that just really quickly runs a bunch of numbers so that you can intelligently make a lot of fantasy sports teams and then spray them all out. And then more often than not, they'll make money.
That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
So you were doing that. You were studying economics in Mandarin. You did your thesis in Mandarin. It's pretty incredible. Along the way, you met your now wife. Is it Susha?
Yep.
Susha, and she is from Belarus. And then she finally, just from being in touch a little bit, she finally got her visa to stay here. So you guys moved to New Hampshire, and now you're in Boston.
Yep.
So a pretty interesting trajectory there. Do you think that camp played a role in that? Because that's not a very typical life trajectory.
Yeah. Undoubtedly, to a certain extent. I will say part of that is like my parents were also pretty international growing up. So I just always kind of had that exposure. And then my grandma actually was really emphasizing when I was growing up that China is going to be the next major global player. And so if you want to position yourself well for the future, you should learn Chinese. So there were a couple factors there, but I don't think I would have actually been able to take that step and actually follow through without some of the character building experiences that I had at camp.
That's a lot of time to be away from home. And you're a little infamous at camp for being severely homesick.
Yeah.
The first year or two or maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
How did you deal with that? And how did the staff help you? Or what kind of tips do you have when people are away from home to manage their emotions and their feeling of homesick?
Yeah, it's a really tough one. Especially because like when I first got to camp, I was 9. So I was pretty small. And I mean, looking back, I don't think I as a 9-year-old was really self-aware enough or capable enough to just manage that on my own. I don't think anyone is really capable of that. At that age, you're still kind of subject to whatever feelings are like natural reactions to the environment that you're in. And so if this is your first major time away from home, it's like, it is normal and natural. I think what was essential is that camp recognized that and addressed it. And so I think the first thing was just getting a little bit of like that real feeling like there's someone that's looking out for you. And I think every kid is going to have a different counselor that did that. I was fortunate enough that I had counselors that I really felt like they like cared about me and were looking out for me. And so they really made the effort to see like, what would I want to do if I want to go fishing or if I want to go and do this event or that event or do something. They would genuinely take that seriously. And that was something different from some of the other camps that I went to where I just felt like I got kind of, you know, left by the wayside a little bit, and the other kids that are clearly more engaged and energetic, they end up getting pulled into the program, and the kids that aren't as, you know, out there fell behind as I did. But camp, it was like identifying the kids that are starting to fall outside the program and pulling them right back into it. And so the way that that manifested for me is I was designated as the FISPA Skropnitz Commissioner. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So I can't remember what FISPA stands for, but it was basically the Camp Voyager like equivalent of some major sports body, like FIFA.
Acronym.
You know, FIFA's kind of like a touchy subject nowadays. That's why I'm kind of hesitating, but it's like FIFA, you know?
yeah.
And so they took one of, I think it was one of Charlie Erdman's like crew trophies or something, and they just covered it in tinfoil and wrote like a FISPA like World Cup Skropnitz Championship. It was almost like a mini little like I don't want to say Olympics, but it was kind of like a World Cup event at camp, but for Skropnitz. And then they would just set up the amps and the little tables, and I'd be in like a little oversized jacket and a hat, and they would just be announcing and then like turn the mic over to me and I'd say whatever, you know, homesick 9-year-old says, and then everyone would clap. And so there was just a giant Skropnitz tournament that I was, you know, overseeing. And then we had this giant feast in the mess hall, and it just, you know, a little extra something to make me feel like I'm actually a part of the community, you know? And I think that really made a big difference.
A little extra attention and giving you a little choice of what you wanted to do.
Yeah. Just reminding, you know, you that you're like, you are a special person, you know, and that like people care about you.
So. Mm-hmm. And then over in China, you're away from your friends and family. Of course, you've made some friends over there, but you were away from friends and family over there. So fast forward to you being an adult, you couldn't just become a commissioner of a fake sports league. So what were some of the things you did over there?
You know, I honestly didn't really get super homesick in China. My wife actually told me about this saying that they have in, at least it's a Russian language saying, that home is where your butt is warm. And so if you can manage to get your butt warm, then you can manage to make a place your home. And I think one of the reasons I didn't really get super homesick is because I just learned that home is, as I know that, like, for many people and still for me too, there is definitely a physical home feeling, but I think there's also a mental home state of just being able to be comfortable with where you are and the situation that you're in. And that's easier said than done in a lot of different situations, but I think it is possible to make a new home for yourself and find those kinds of, like, really fundamental comfort and safety feelings, even in a different place. And I think that's probably something that comes out of camp, because when you're on the trail, you're making a new home every night. And eventually you start to learn that that process of, you know, reestablishing your, like, your safety net and having a routine through which you take a place and turn it into something that's cozy that you want to stay in, that's another, like, critical life skill that I think it's hard to develop if you're not having a trail experience like that.
And it's easy to get your butt warm on the trail because usually you have a campfire at night. So
exactly. Yeah. Campfire, you got your nice foam thermarests. So you take that fire heat into the tent with you, get it into the sleeping bag. I mean, that tent is home every night, right?
That's right. Is there some longer story history behind that saying, or is that just sort of a...
Ooh, that's a good question. And I don't know. Honestly, if I had to guess, it's probably a function of that part of the world having a lot of tough stuff happening and people getting displaced without any choice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you've just got to figure out how to get by even in these, you know, terrible circumstances. And if you don't have a home, but you're sitting in this place that happens to be safe and warm right now, then that's your home.
I think just from what I've seen, that friends become your substitute family in many ways when you're away from your family.
Absolutely.
And we see that at camp a lot. Kids with several close friends there in general are less homesick than the kid who maybe hasn't had enough time to make a good friend there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other ways, and it's fine if the answer is no, but are there other ways besides making some close friends that you have maybe found of getting a feeling of being home or being part of a community?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, you, like, now that you mention it, looking back, like, I think my homesickness actually diminished significantly once I started to have my, like, buddies that I knew would be coming back to camp every summer, that we were in the same cabins and we were, like, tight. That was, like, a game changer for me, honestly.
It's a tough question.
Yeah, it's a tough question, because I think the ultimate solution to homesickness really is making those connections with other people. Because if you're not tight with people and you don't feel like there are people that have your back and that you're part of the community, then, like, you're not, it's going to be tough. What I can say that I'm really thankful for is that my folks never, like, called me or came and got me or anything. They would write letters, but I'm just really thankful in retrospect, as much as it probably hurt in the moment, to know that I couldn't call home, even though I know camp has a phone, because I just know how good camp was for me. And I am, like, afraid that if I had made that phone call or attempted to get out, I would have missed this opportunity. Yeah, the solution to homesickness is really learning to love where you are right then and there. And I think it's easier to do that when you've got other people to share that moment with. And so you do really need to have those interpersonal connections to satisfy all those conditions, I would say.
That's why I think going on these canoe trips are so important to the overall experience at camp, because you can get close to someone just by being in proximity to them, but going with four or five other kids and a counselor on a trip through a shared experience for 5 days, you really see them.
Exactly.
Not all the time, but most of the time they're so tight when they come back. And
yeah,
you're like, they get back to camp and you're like, okay, guys, it's time to split up. You got to go to your own cabin and try to sit with some other people now.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they're just so tight. But
yeah, that like shared experience is something like really strong. It's hard to build those relationships. Like even today now, it's like I just moved to a new city and it's like, damn, I don't know how to meet people. It's like I need to be forced onto a canoe trip with four strangers.
Yeah.
So those experiences on the trail they are some really tight special bonds. And yeah, you learn what it really means to know someone else when you're spending every waking moment with them through good times and through bad.
And I think to your other point too, it's parents get kid sickness just like kids get homesickness. You know, they miss their kids, and
yeah,
the only way they can communicate is with letters at camp. And if there's an emergency, we allow them to talk on the phone, and sometimes that's even the letters aren't the most helpful, because you really got to word the letters to your kids that we feel like we're missing out on your awesome experience and not the other way around. Like it, as a parent, it's not very helpful if you tell your kids how much they're missing. I guess a tip for the parents to help kids with homesickness is to keep the focus on the kid. But it's hard for the parents to be away from their kids like that too. And some kids aren't big on writing letters.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And luckily for them, we post on social media so they see pictures of their kids, but sometimes kids don't even write letters home. And
yeah, that's a bummer. I just think that experience of using a letter to communicate helps to lengthen that like time horizon over which we think about when things are going to happen. I know it's kind of a cliche to say it, but like the speed of communication is so intense. And I think needing to wait for a letter to move is a good mindfulness exercise in first crafting a message that's worth the wait, but B, like waiting for that response when you send a letter. When you do finally get that response, that's some good stuff. And it makes the wait worth it.
And you can hold on to it and see it and reread it. And it's physical.
I absolutely kept letters that I would get when I was at camp. When I would get a letter at camp, like, hell yeah, I would keep that thing. Like that was like a precious possession that I would like keep stowed away, like in a book on my shelf, you know.
I know Dylan still, even though he's on staff and he can use his phone when he's not around campers, he could call or FaceTime his family now, but he still writes letters to his friends and family when he's at camp.
Yeah, that's some good stuff.
It's more intimate, it's more meaningful, and
keeps the postal service running.
That's right. Well, we're about out of time, but so I won't keep you too much longer, but it's been a few years since you've been at camp. What do you find yourself missing the most?
Just the people, honestly, because all of the moving around, well, I don't want to say just the people, but that's like overwhelmingly the number one thing is, you know, like we lived in New Hampshire. So I would go out and I would go and do my own little wilderness adventures on my own and everything, but it's really the camp people. And I don't think I've ever found another group of people that I connect with so well than the people I can. And so, you know, between all of my moves and going across the world, really hard to like establish and maintain really meaningful relationships when you know that your time in a certain place is so ephemeral. But those camp relationships, there's something special because it's like it's only a month, it's a really short time, but you still forge really tight bonds. And if you keep seeing the same people every summer, it just becomes your safety net almost, your crew that you know you could always fall back on. And I think everyone needs that feeling. And if you don't have it, then it's like you're kind of lacking that fundamental sense of safety that everyone really needs. So the people for sure is like the number one thing that I miss.
You're obviously still not going to camp as a camper, so you're not regularly seeing these people. But are you sort of saying that they gave you this sense of deep friendship and it's just stuck with you and it's just this abiding underlying feeling in your life that you still have, even though you don't go on trips, canoe trips with that crew anymore?
Yeah, I would say so. And that's something special, like, because those rock solid trusting in people is like at a premium. I think in general, in these days, as I'm getting older, and even if I haven't like kept up with everyone, I think it's just out of a recognition that everyone's got their own stuff going on, but you know for sure that your camp people have got your back and that you're going to be tight, like you never left when you get back there. And I think that's just, again, a testament to how genuine and deep those bonds are.
It's crazy. And people still think of summer camps as just a fun bubble blowing experience.
Yeah, right. And I mean, maybe at some places it is, but at some places it isn't.
Well, Ned, is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap it up here?
You want to give me some more words to just get backwards real quick?
United States of America. Merry Christmas.
Iren San Sirk.
Happy New Year.
Ipa Wenre.
My name is Ned Yonkers, and I'm a Voyager.
Imenam Siten Sreknoi Denai Mi Arugai.
Are you just saying that and you're just hoping that no one will actually slow down your speech and do it backwards and say, oh, wow, he is, well, right.
So here's the thing. I'm just saying it like as if you were to spell it backwards. But the next level is if I actually like learn how to do it so that if you reverse my voice, it will say it in that like denied, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I would have to like really change my intonation. Like, yep.
That's incredible.
I haven't gotten there.
can you do Mandarin in backwards?
No. Because it doesn't really work the same way.
Yeah.
Because they just have the individual characters. So if I just write the character backwards, it's pretty much the same thing.
Right. Well, Ned, I've appreciated having you on the show. It's been nice to catch up.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Alex. I hope you enjoyed all of my weird stories and funny quirks.
I absolutely did.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to visit the camp website, campvoyager.com, to learn more about summer programming, to read blog posts, and to order some gear. Follow camp on Instagram @camp_voyager. We'll see you next time on the trail.